Rocky Horror Minute is rated R. The Rocky Horror Picture Show is also rated R. We're going to spend this time discussing the movie in gory detail, and along the road, we will talk about some adult content and use some of our favorite swear words.
Don't feed shrimp to the dog.
Consider yourselves warned.
Welcome to Rocky Horror Minute, the podcast where we discuss the Rocky Horror Picture Show in excruciating detail, 1 minute at a time. I'm one of your hosts, Kelly.
And I'm your other host, Leandra.
And we're joined again tonight by Luke Allen.
Hello.
How have you been in the past minute or so?
It's been good. I feel like I've gone through some character development, and I'm going to be like stronger and I don't know, more developed. I hadn't finished that gag, but well, yeah, I'm.
It's so good.
The writers have improved, and I'm hoping to become a series regular.
Well, that is great. Yeah, and I'm sure nothing terrible is going to happen to you at the end of this minute. So
I'm not expecting it. In fact, my notes specifically say nothing terrible happens to me at the end of this minute.
Yes. Yeah. It's always good to specify that in your
It's
notes
weird. I always write it. It's only relevant today.
So today we'll be discussing minute 75, which means we're officially 3/4 of the way through the movie.
What happened to the other quarter? I ate it.
Leandra, what happens in minute 75?
We begin with Frank facing the wall. He laments Rocky's behaving just the way that Eddie did, turning around and pulling his fingers through his hair. He says, "Do you think I made a mistake splitting his brain between the two of them?" Magenta, who is extremely over it, and Riff, who is extremely sneaky looking in a very happy way, are watching Frank deliver his sad little lesbian clown moment, and Magenta snaps and presses forward to confront Frank, declaring, "I grow weary of this world. When shall we return to Transylvania, huh?" Frank calmly responds, "Magenta, I'm indeed grateful to both you and your brother Riff Raff." During this, Riff begins caressing Magenta's arm with a finger, very brotherly, sensually, you know, the way that one would interact with a sibling, I guess.
That's what Patricia Quinn would have us believe. Now, Luke, you have a sibling, correct?
I do, yeah. I don't know how now, you know this. Oh, yeah, because did I say it?
You've talked about her. Mm-hmm. So Patricia Quinn is very insistent that nothing about her relationship with Riff Raff in this movie is incestuous, and it's perfectly normal brother and sister behavior. Your thoughts on that?
I don't know whether, like, her only frame of reference for brother and sister behavior is, like, the Dreamers or something, but, like,
Or maybe Greek mythology.
I think it works. It adds that sort of slight oddity, but Richard O'Brien's like
Richard O'Brien is like, "Oh no, I meant for it to be incest," and she was like, "What? I had no idea." And it's like, "Well, he was kissing your neck, so I don't know."
Yeah, no, that's
anyway. I'm sorry to disrupt that. I had to ask.
It's bizarre, and I think it says a lot about the film that I just didn't really question it at all. It was just like, that's normal for this context.
It is. I will say that the sensual caressing seems to be what calms Magenta, and Frank continues, mostly ignored by Magenta, "You have both served me well. Loyalty such as yours shall not go unrewarded. You will discover that when the mood takes me, I can be quite generous." At this, Magenta snaps her attention back at Frank, snidely saying, "I ask for nothing, master." And then Frank responds sarcastically, "And you shall receive it in abundance." And he storms off and into the elevator. He turns around with a flourish and says, "Come, we are ready for the floor show," leaving Riff and Magenta alone amongst the statues. Riff holds Magenta's hand and begins leading her somewhere. We'll find out where exactly next minute.
Ooh.
All right. Big minute for exposition again.
Yeah, and we stay on one angle for, like, quite a while, which, like, especially there's been a lot of fast cuts, like, earlier on in the film that, like, I don't know, it did feel as though it dragged a little bit, which, once again, it's minute by minute, like, that That happens. I remember in About Time, like, there was 30 seconds of, like, a car driving, and, like, it was like, oh, this goes on for ages. But, like, no one makes a film to be viewed in this context. It'd be fascinating if someone did. Like, if one day I worked on a project where, like, it was specifically intended for minute-by-minute breakdowns, like, I'd be interested to see whether that changes anything. Have any, like, MXM people made a feature? Is that a thing? There's a lot of us.
Not that I know of, but that would be cool.
Yeah, if they're like, no, every minute we have to have this weird little prop move just in the background. Yes. That would be amazing. Yeah,
and, like, every minute just has to, like, end on a satisfactory point. Like, the sentence ends at the right point, or each scene is, like, exactly a minute long. Like, because that's always the great thing, is, like, when you do an MXM and it's like, oh, this is self-contained. This is, like, there's no words cut off halfway through. There's nothing. I mean, this one's done all right. Like, it's nice, but it's sort of rare. But About Time was great in that regard. Like, pretty much every scene's, like, 2 minutes long, so it was sort of nice and fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, I mean, Patricia Quinn, actually, in the commentary, said a lot of the same stuff. She also kept talking about what a slow burn this is. That's what she kept saying. She actually said, once again, compared herself favorably to Lillian Gish, saying Lillian Gish couldn't have done that. But she kept saying it's such a slow burn. And then she said it was terrible for Tim. And then, or it was killing Tim. But then Richard O'Brien said something about her breasts and how basically said that her breasts were something for them both to look at in this minute. And then she did that. She I would say feigns innocence a lot in this commentary. And she was like, what? I had no idea. I didn't even notice that you could see that. She really was saying that. Anyway.
Sure, Jan.
Richard O'Brien said, what? Did you think people liked your acting? Which I thought was pretty funny.
Oh, it was that's a cute so good. Moment.
I thought about clipping it, but then I was like, I'm clipping too much lately.
I do like the face journey that everybody's going through in this minute. I love that Magenta just asks this very biting question of Frank and then immediately doesn't care about the answer.
Yeah, it is funny. It, like, does she? Well, it's also because, like, I don't think that the takeover, spoiler alert, is a spontaneous thing. So it's like, she has to know that they're just about to, like, kill him and go back to Transylvania themselves. So
I had a person express to me that it's during this moment that Magenta finally is on board with Riff's plan to overthrow from Frank or take over from Frank, murdering anyone who gets in his way. And if that's the case, Riff knows before Magenta that she's reached her breaking point, which is why he's smiling so much.
Yeah. I wrote in my notes that Riff looks like he has farted. And that is the exact face he's making, and
that's the exact face that Brad makes when your partner Brad, not Brad Majors,
yeah,
that makes when he is mightily farted and doesn't want anybody to know.
Except for he gets way redder.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's actually a really interesting way to think about it. And that's one of the many things we, I think, learn in this minute. I'm fairly certain that this is where we learn that Transylvania is, well, I guess it's their galaxy, but it's where they're from, like, well, I guess that's not true, because we could have still been talking about Transylvania, like, in Europe. But for sure, it's the first time we learn that Magenta, well, no, because she says, I grow weary of this world, when shall we return to Transylvania? So I think this is the first minute where we learn that Transylvania is another world to them, and that she wants to return. And it's the first minute where we learn about the brain thing explicitly. I mean, I know Eddie had the scar, but, you know, that's a really important line that I think is really easy for first-time viewers to miss. It explains a lot of the plot. But, yeah. And then also, correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is the first time we learn that Magenta and Riff Raff are brother and sister.
I don't I'm trying to think this through.
I can't think of when else it would be.
For the sake of argument, let's say that's true, because that makes everything that they've done before this point, like, seem normal until you go, wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I think that that was probably the goal. I think that, because, like, there's no reason to think it's weird initially. You're like, oh, they're lovers. That kind of makes sense, you know? But then, yeah, when Frank goes, you and your brother riffraff, I think you're supposed to be like, wait, no.
That is a callback. The shit, he's my brother.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't know that.
I love that. Yeah, I feel like it maybe the reason why I never really thought so much about it is because it's so in passing at a point that's already absurd and surreal. It's just like, do we know that these as Transylvanians that like brother means the same? And like,
well, I guess that's true.
Maybe not.
Fair point.
Yeah. But that's really all I have about this minute. There's really not a lot to bring up.
Yeah. I mean, that's mostly it for me as well. Oh, Richard O'Brien also commented on the commentary here about Tim Curry's top. He said, that was rather nice, that little top that Tim was wearing there, wasn't it? That's rather nice. I'd get one of those myself, actually. And that is very on brand as something Richard O'Brien would wear.
Oh, absolutely. And I love the way it looks. It looks like matriarchal.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say it's very severe.
Yeah, it is. It's honestly a beautiful piece of clothing. I really like it. But yeah, that's all I have. Nice quick one. What about you, Luke?
Yeah, no, that's all I've got. I had two notes, quite a lengthy angle, and then I've just got red. But yeah, I don't know what I've got to say about red. I just for some reason thought, well, that's a good conversation point. But
you know what? It's a good thing to highlight because it reminds you if you're playing Frank where you're supposed to go stand. It's a good way to remember it. You need to be against the big red door.
Yeah. It's sort of. It's nice, it's a convenient, it's an easy bit of set deck. You know, there's not as much as, I'm sure there's some, if it wasn't, like, for me, 11:15 at night, I'd have, like, some detailed analysis of what, like, the red represents. But I'm just like, it's just red, isn't it? Like, it's just...
No, believe me, in the case of this movie, that is always... the correct answer. Things were not quite thought through to that level.
I've often thought regarding that sort of thing. I've often thought in film, like sometimes it's accidental that, like deep in your head, like it does. There is a subconscious link between a color and an idea, and like you do that. But similarly, like I also don't like just the detailed overanalysis of stuff. I've had my own work overanalyzed slightly, like when actors are in like Q&A's and they're like, oh, I love how like the character clearly has this like deep backstory and like describes their backstory. I'm just like, yep, sure, yeah. And it's just but yeah,
it does. Yeah, now like...
I mean, if this were Stanley Kubrick presents the Rocky Horror Picture Show,
I'd watch that.
I would be more inclined. Yeah, I would definitely watch it. I think it would be a very different movie, and I would not want any of the actors involved in this film to go through being directed by Stanley Kubrick. But I think it would be a great movie, and I would then say, generally there are no accidents in Stanley Kubrick movies. He was an incredibly meticulous director. Not so much with this movie. Yeah.
So, speaking on that point, then, in an ideal world, not necessarily like there's two angles you could take this. Either like what would be a fascinating different interpretation, or who would do it well. But is there a director you'd love to have seen tackle this?
I don't know. This is kind of lightning in a bottle for me. Like, I don't know that they could have made this what I like if they had done it well.
My gut reaction was Brian De Palma, but like, I think he would make a similar movie in a lot of ways. So.
Kind of same with my gut thought was Terry Gilliam, but I think I think it would be kind of similar. Or you go to, like, the total other angle and be like, let's see Tommy Wiseau direct Rocky Horror, which I'd watch.
Oh God, yes.
But
the man makes watchable movies.
Yeah, no, that's it. It's like, you know, I think it was something that Rob talked about on The Room Minute. I'm sure it did. It was about The Room, and that tends to be how minute-by-minute shows work. If there's something you can have said, it's been said. But it's like so many bad movies dip in the middle and, like, lose your attention about halfway through when the badness wears out and, like, it just becomes a bit dull. The Room is one of those few films where it's like it keeps you entertained all the way through, and that is a skill. Intentionally or unintentionally, yeah. It's
well, and a big advantage that Tommy Wiseau had, or and The Room had, over a lot of these, because there's a lot of these legendarily bad movies that are like personal passion projects. Another, like Neil Breen, makes tons of these, and his are so incoherent. They make The Room look like Citizen Kane, like truly. And the difference, I believe, is that Tommy Wiseau spent a ton of money hiring people who did know how to make movies. Because he didn't really know, but he spent a lot of money on people who did have experience in the industry, and therefore they were able to make a product that was actually pretty watchable.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
I think it's, yeah, anyway. I think it's fascinating, and I will sort of, as I always do, post minute-by-minute stuff, like, I will revisit Rocky Horror at some point and see whether it, like, clicks more with me, because, like, it's such a bizarre one. It's like I get it, like I understand the appeal, and I understand why I should like it, and I'm painfully indifferent to it. But yeah, I have no reason for that. So I do think sometimes it can just be the state of mind in which I watched it. Like, I didn't, you know, I watched it this week between tasks and as a task, which is never helpful. Like, whenever doing like minute by minute guest spots, I'm like, I must watch the film in advance, but treating it as a task rather than as like, let's have fun and watch a film. And so that that also sort of changes perspective. Sorry, I can't remember what the actual question was or what the point was, but like, I said something there.
Well, we were just discussing Stanley Kubrick's Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah,
let's go ahead and jump into callbacks though.
Yeah, sure thing. So what I have, is when Frank is against the wall, you say, show us your one virgin orifice, and then he pulls his hair back to reveal his left ear, and then you said, just the one ear, huh? And so there's that, when Magenta starts her little meltdown, it's, I grow weary of this accent, because truly she starts to drop the accent, or it gets very strange. A really old one, which is not really in vogue anymore, but was like a classic for a long time, is after she goes, huh, it's kind of the same tone for you to be like, staying alive. So that one,
it's fun.
Yeah, it's that's a really old one that obviously that used to be like a standard, not so much anymore. After she says, when shall we return to Transylvania, huh? It's, I told you, once you capture Moose and Squirrel. That's much more popular these days. And then my personal favorite from this minute, when the little weird arm stroking starts to go on, it's, where's his hand and why is she smiling, and where's her hand and why is he smiling, and where's my hand and why am I smiling. So very good. You can urge Magenta to ask for a pony, and then when she says, I ask for nothing, master, you say, well, you could have had a pony. And then when Frank, in that silence as Frank is walking over to the elevator, you go, fee, fi, fo, fum, first I jerk off, then I.
And he says, come.
Yeah, I was indicating to you, Leandra, sorry.
Oh.
I mean, I realize you cannot see me. Anyway.
I see.
I just thought you'd jump in there. Classic comedy-esque of like, just guess and figure out the rhyme. And I don't know. Victoria Wood did that a lot. It's just like, tell a song. You know what the rhyme's going to be. Just leave it there.
I like it.
Yeah, and then the last one I have, when he says we're ready for the floor show, all this and a floor show, which is just a comment, really.
Yeah. I have a couple more. When Frank says Rocky's behaving just the way that Eddie did, you go heterosexually. And after the callback of as soon as you find Moose and Squirrel, you go, Magenta, you are looking for wrong Rocky.
Yeah.
And when Frank's doing the you have both served me well, kind of the PR voice, you say, you're losing her, Frank. And then, how much do you charge for a blowjob? I ask for nothing. I'll take two. Or you say, I ask for nothing under 12 inches. A girl's got to have her standards. And the callback to that is, I fold my dick in half for no one. And you shall receive it in my buttocks instead of in abundance. And then the final one is, what's your favorite breakfast? Come. You're ready for the floor show. That's all I have.
Breakfast of Champions. Great.
So, Luke, I think that we're going to send you on a very important errand.
Yes.
To the woods.
Gotcha. Yeah, the woods. That's, yeah. We'll,
yeah, and you know you don't have anything to worry about because we know nothing terrible is going to happen to you today.
Yeah, it says it in my notes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be good.
Yeah, Perry Bedden is not there. Just if you see somebody who looks like Perry Bedden, it isn't actually Perry Bedden.
Yeah, of course not.
Yeah. No murderers in that part of the woods, as far as I know.
Well, the murder-free woods. Yeah. I'll head on my way.
Then I guess it's time for us to sign off the way we sign off all our shows.
With now.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. So get the fuck out.
To the late night double feature picture show.